The next time you are standing in the produce aisle of your grocery store, just staring at a perfectly round, blemish-free tomato, consider the brutal high-tech war it actually took to get it
There
there.
really is a war.
Yeah.
Right. Because getting that tomato to your salad today, on Friday, March 13, 2026, involves this completely invisible battlefield. And that's what we're getting into today.
It's a fascinating topic.
It is. We are pulling entirely from one source today. It's a 2025 research paper titled iNat Ag, Multi-class Classification Models Enabled by a Large-Scale Benchmark Dataset.
Very catchy title.
Oh yeah, they always are. But the mission of this deep dive is to explore how an absolutely massive collection of smartphone photos taken by just, everyday nature lovers is actively teaching artificial intelligence how to save our global food supply.
Which sounds like sci-fi, but it's happening right now.
Exactly. Okay, let's unpack this. The core problem here is that identifying a plant out in the wild is a massive computational headache. I mean, doesn't AI already know what an apple tree looks like? My phone can recognize my dog, so why is a plant so hard?
Well, the standard data sets we have historically used to train agricultural AI are, they're fundamentally flawed. They basically treat farms like pristine laboratories.
Right.
Before the iNatAg benchmark was established, researchers were working with collections like PlantDoc. And I mean, PlantDoc contained a grand total of 2,598 images.
Wait, really? Just 2,000, which in the realm of machine learning is essentially a rounding error.
Yeah, it's
You
nothing.
cannot train a robust global model on 2,000
You
images.
certainly cannot, especially when that specific data set was limited to just 13 species and it focused almost entirely on disease
So it
identification.
wasn't even about identifying the plant itself, really.
Right, exactly. And then another major data set the industry relied on was DeepWeeds.
Okay, deep weeds.
Yeah, and DeepWeeds had higher quality imagery, roughly 17,500 images, but it was limited to just 8 specific weed species found exclusively in Australia.
Oh, wow. So very regional.
Highly regional, it lacked broad taxonomic coverage, and more importantly, it did not include any crop species at all.
Wait, so the model knew what an Australian weed looked like, but it was completely blind to the actual crop that weed was invading.
Yep, completely blind.
I mean, that is a fatal flaw for precision agriculture. When a robotic tractor or like an automated drone is moving through a field, it doesn't just need a Wikipedia summary of a plant.
No, it needs to act.
Right, it needs an immediate binary truth. It needs to look at a green leaf and instantly calculate, is this a crop that I need to protect or is this a weed that I need to destroy?
And making that binary decision is practically impossible if the AI has only ever been trained on photos taken in perfect lighting, against these stark white backgrounds.
Right, it's like the difference between recognizing a friend who is standing alone in a perfectly lit photography studio versus trying to spot that exact same friend in the middle of a crowded, muddy, poorly lit nightclub where everyone in the room is wearing the exact same shade of green.
That is a perfect way to put it.
If the AI only knows the pristine version, it fails completely in the dirt and chaos of a real farm.
Exactly. And this failure in real-world environments is exactly what drove the researchers behind this paper to build the iNatAg dataset. They realized the sterile lab data was useless, so they went to the crowd.
And the scale here is just staggering.
It really is. 4.72 million images covering 2,959 distinct plant species. That breaks down to 1,959 distinct plant species. That breaks down to 1,986 crop species and 973 weed species.
That is a massive jump from 2,000 photo.
Oh, absolutely. And to achieve this, they leveraged the massive pre-existing iNaturalist database, which is basically a platform full of crowdsourced nature photos uploaded by citizens worldwide.
But they couldn't just dump the entire iNaturalist database into an AI model, right? Like a random hiker's blurry photo of a rare mountain orchid has zero utility for a commercial wheat farmer.
No, none at all.
So they had to somehow filter millions of images to find the plants actively participating in this agricultural turf war.
Right, and they achieved that filtration by cross-referencing the iNaturalist species metadata with two highly authoritative global catalogs.
Okay, which ones?
First, the FAO EcoCrop database, which tracks cultivated crops worldwide, and second, the Weed Science Society of America, or WSSA, which maintains a composite list of known weed species.
Okay, that makes sense. But the technical hurdle here, and the paper gets into this, is that plant taxonomy is notoriously messy.
Oh, it's a nightmare.
Right. Latin names change, spellings vary between regions, and crowdsourced data is inherently prone to typos. Someone is typing on their phone in the woods.
Exactly. So to solve this, the researchers used fuzzy string matching based on Levenshtein distance.
Which, for those who don't know, is a mathematically precise way of measuring how far apart two strings of text are.
Right.
Levenshtein distance basically calculates the minimum number of single character edits. So insertions, deletions, or substitutions required to change one word into another.
Yeah, it's really clever.
So if an amateur botanist uploads a photo to iNaturalist and spells a Latin classification with an I instead of an E, the Levenshtein distance is just one.
Exactly.
The algorithm flags the statistical similarity and pulls the data in rather than discarding a perfectly viable image of a crop just because of a keyboard typo.
Yeah, it functions as a highly aggressive taxonomy-aware autocorrect. And when you are scraping a database of millions of uploads, that mathematical tolerance for error is the only way to build a comprehensive data set.
But gathering the massive volume of data was only the first step, right? Because
yeah.
They also had to heavily restrict it.
They did. They intentionally capped the data set at 2,500 images per species, and they enforced a strict minimum of 50 images per species.
Which is so important, because if they didn't enforce those caps, the model would fall victim to massive class imbalance.
Absolutely.
Like in early facial recognition models, we saw systems completely fail to identify certain demographics because the training data heavily over-indexed on one specific type of face.
The model just optimizes for the majority and ignores the minority.
Exactly. It's like teaching a kid about animals, but only ever showing them pictures of golden retrievers. Eventually, they are just going to think every animal they see is a golden retriever.
Right. The neural network essentially gets lazy.
Yeah. If the plant data set has 1 million photos of common wheat, but only 20 photos of a highly invasive rare weed, it starts guessing wheat for everything because statistically, that minimizes its error rate during training.
What's fascinating here is that while they strictly balance the curriculum, they completely embrace the visual noise within the images themselves.
The nightclub lighting.
Yes. These 4.7 million photos feature bad lighting, extreme shadows, weird angles, completely cluttered backgrounds, and plants at totally different stages of growth.
And usually you don't want that.
No, in traditional computer vision, you try to clean that noise. But in this project, the noise is the core feature.
Wow.
It forces the algorithm to learn the underlying structural and morphological identity of the plant rather than just relying on perfect lighting or specific camera angle.
So we have millions of noisy, realistic photos, perfectly balanced between crops and weeds. But out in the actual field, plants don't grow in isolation.
No, they don't.
It is a literal turf war. Crops and weeds are actively fighting for the same soil nutrients, the same water, and the same sunlight. And the paper highlights some incredibly vivid examples of these real-world associations.
Yeah, the pairs they mention are really interesting.
Right, like the common bean Physiolus vulgaris is constantly fighting off this aggressive weed called red root pigweed or Amaranthus retroflexus.
And they look so similar in the field.
They do. And meanwhile, a massive cereal crop like sorghum bicolor, gets frequently choked out by purple nuts edge, Cyperus rotundus. When you look at the photos of these plants competing in the data set, they're often just a tangled, chaotic green mess.
Just a wall of green.
Yeah, their leaves are physically overlapping. So if these plants are tangled up in a green mess and sometimes look incredibly similar, how can a computer possibly tell them apart?
Well, identifying them purely by pixel data in those conditions pushes the limits of standard computer vision. I mean, the leaves often mimic each other visually, especially in early growth stages.
Which means the neural network cannot just process the green pixels.
Exactly. It has to utilize the secret weapon built into the iNatAg dataset, which is geolocation.
Of course.
Yeah. Nearly all of those 4.7 million smartphone images include latitude and longitude metadata. The system knows the exact geographic coordinates where the photo was taken.
So during the training process, the researchers didn't just feed the image into the model.
No, they normalized the latitude and longitude, passed those coordinates through a dedicated neural network layer, and then fused that spatial data directly with the visual data.
That is brilliant. It is basically embedding a geographic probability directly into the vision model.
Exactly.
So if a drone is hovering over a field and captures an image of two plants that look visually identical, the pixel data alone might result in a 50-50 confidence split.
Right. It wouldn't know which is which.
But if the model knows that one of those plants only thrives in the humid climate of South America, and the other is an invasive weed native exclusively to the arid regions of Australia, the GPS coordinates act as the ultimate mathematical tiebreaker.
Yep. It calculates the regional prior probability to separate visual twins. The model learns region-specific patterns organically, you know, because crops are highly climate-dependent and weed distributions are deeply tied to local ecosystems.
So we have the messy data and we have the location data.
Right.
What happens when they actually build the AI brain?
Well, to benchmark just how well this fusion of messy visual data and precise geographic data worked, the researchers tested the data set using SWIN transformer models.
Okay, so a bit of context for you listening. Standard convolutional neural networks, or CNNs, process an image by basically sliding a small filter over the pixels.
Which is great for local textures.
Right, but terrible at seeing the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
And then early vision transformers tried to look at the entire image all at once, which just requires a massive amount of computational power.
Too much for a small drone.
Exactly. So the SWIN transformer uses shifted windows. It divides the image into local windows, figures out the patterns within those specific boundaries, and then shifts those windows in the next layer to look at the borders between them.
It's a very efficient way to do it.
It builds a hierarchical understanding of the plant, starting from the microscopic texture of a single vein on a leaf, all the way up to the global geometry of the entire branch structure.
And that hierarchical processing architecture is exactly what allowed their best model to achieve a 92.38% accuracy on the most crucial task.
The binary distinction of telling a crop from a weed.
Exactly.
Over 92% accuracy in identifying a weed in a messy, real-world environment. That is phenomenal for commercial deployment.
It's huge.
But diving into the confusion matrices in the paper, there's a pretty stark discrepancy.
Yeah, there is.
Wait, the crop versus weed binary accuracy is 92.38%. But when the model attempted to identify the specific species of the plant, the accuracy drops significantly to 79.4%.
Right.
If the SWIN transformer is building this incredible hierarchical map of the leaf veins, why the drop-off? Why is it struggling to name the exact species?
Well, the drop-off really highlights the extreme morphological plasticity of plants.
Morphological plasticity, meaning how much they change shape.
Exactly. Distinguishing between two highly similar species within the exact same family requires a microscopic degree of detail that even high-resolution smartphone images sometimes just lack.
That makes sense.
However, the model's understanding of the taxonomic hierarchy remains incredibly robust. It might get the exact species wrong, dropping to that 79.4% accuracy, but it is almost always misclassifying the plant within the correct broader family.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, at the family level, the accuracy jumps back up to 94.07%, and at the genus level, it holds at 89.83%.
So it's analyzing the structural geometry and basically concluding, I might not know the exact subspecies of this wild tomato weed, but I mathematically guarantee it belongs to the nightshade family.
That's exactly it. And the confusion matrices show exactly where this morphological plasticity trips the system up. Major crops with highly distinct, consistent features like cassava and tomato hit over 88% accuracy easily.
They're easy to spot.
Right. But then the model encounters a weed like the yellow poplar. The AI was confused by the yellow poplar 25% of the time, classifying it simply as other.
Because the yellow poplar is basically a shapeshifter.
It really is.
It has high intra-class variability. A young yellow poplar leaf looks structurally different from a mature one, and its visual characteristics change depending on the soil composition and sunlight of its specific environment.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though.
Okay.
To try and boost the performance of these models on those tricky species, the researchers applied a fine-tuning technique called LoRA, or low-rank adaptation.
Right.
But the results revealed a massive counterintuitive paradox. When they applied LoRA to the large AI models, it performed exactly as intended. It made them smarter, bumping that species accuracy up to the 79.4%.
Okay, so it worked.
Well, but when they applied the exact same fine-tuning to the small AI models, it triggered a collapse. The species accuracy for the smaller models dropped by 5 to 10%.
Wait, really? Because LoRA is designed to be computationally efficient. I mean, instead of retraining the millions of parameters in a neural network from scratch, LoRA freezes the original model weights and injects small rank decomposition matrices into the architecture. You are essentially training a tiny, highly specialized side brain that merges its new knowledge with the frozen base model.
Right. And in a massive architecture, like the SWIN large model, which processes high resolution 384 by 384 pixel images, the network has hundreds of millions of parameters.
It's huge.
Yeah, it has the sheer dimensional capacity to absorb these targeted low-rank matrices. The adaptation layers act like highly specialized botanical experts, fine-tuning an already vast generalized knowledge base.
But the SwinTiny model is operating on much smaller, 224 by 224 pixel images. It has a fraction of the parameters.
A tiny fraction.
So applying LoRa to the tiny model is like trying to run a massive cutting-edge operating system update on a 10-year-old smartphone.
That's a great analogy.
The base hardware, or, well, the small model's limited neural architecture, just lacks the dimensional space to map the new complex instructions.
Exactly. When you force that highly specific adaptation layer onto it, you overwrite and disrupt the fragile feature maps it has already built.
Oh, wow.
The entire system suffers from feature collapse, it forgets how to generalize, and its accuracy just plummets.
Which is a huge problem.
It is. This paradox is a vital finding for hardware engineers, because the ultimate goal of the INAT Egg benchmark is to deploy these vision models onto cheap, low-powered drones and automated tractors operating in rural fields.
Right, places with limited compute and no internet connection.
Exactly. Those machines have to run small models. This research proves you cannot just blindly apply advanced fine-tuning techniques like LoRa to edge devices and expect a performance boost. It requires highly specific architectural scaling.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? We have mapped out Levenshtein distance, shifted windows and SWIN transformers, and the feature collapse of low-rank adaptation.
We've covered a lot of ground.
We really have. But the reason this matters is that precision agriculture, powered by open-source data sets like iNATAG, which is currently publicly available right now on the AGML platform, is going to fundamentally rewrite the economics and environmental impact of how our food is grown.
Completely rewrite it.
If a low-power drone can fly over a field of common beans, calculate the latitude and longitude, process the visual noise, and spot the exact location of the red root pigweed with 92% accuracy, the paradigm shifts entirely.
Yeah, you don't need to spray the whole field anymore.
Exactly. Farmers no longer have to blanket thousands of acres in chemical herbicides. They can deploy microdoses of treatment explicitly targeting the coordinates of the weed.
Which is incredible for the environment.
Vastly reduced chemical runoff into the water supply, significantly higher crop yields, and ensuring the grocery store shelves remain stocked with those perfect tomatoes we talked about at the start.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the real triumph of the INATAG paper is proving that artificial intelligence in the agricultural domain is only valuable when it embraces the chaos of the physical world.
Yeah.
By stepping out of the sterile laboratory and accepting the noisy, misaligned cell phone photos captured by global citizens, they build an architecture that can actually survive in the dirt and the mud.
It is a massive leap forward, and looking at the sheer scale of what they have built, it leaves a lingering question to ponder.
Oh.
Yeah, a concept that stretches beyond the immediate findings of the paper, but feels entirely inevitable given the architecture they've just proven.
I'm listening.
If this open source AI is now capable of mapping exactly where specific, highly climate-dependent crops and invasive weeds are thriving around the entire globe, relying on a constantly updating feed of millions of geotagged photos, could researchers use this exact same framework to track the real-time creeping migrations of plant life caused by climate change?
Wow. Yeah, they absolutely could.
Right. Are these models not just identifying our food supply today, but actively calculating the future, shifting map of our global ecosystem?
That's a huge thought.
Something to chew on next time you are standing in the produce aisle. Until next time, keep diving deep.